Okay, well, this is the third in our series of Stress Management as a Christian. And I'm Dale Jampkard, for anyone new that came in today. I'm in private practice as a counselor in Portland, Oregon, where I counsel with people around stress and the ways that it's affecting them. So what I'd like to do is move to the third step. The first day we dealt with stance, and we dealt with this whole issue of how do I relax in a situation, and how do I relax in life in general, but then also in a tense situation, how do I become relaxed and alert at the same time? Because therein lies the issue. A lot of times our image of relaxation is one of, you know, flaking out in front of the TV or taking a snooze or so forth. Well, those methods of relaxation are worthless. If you're in a very tense moment, someone's berating you, or you've got a job that's due in a couple of minutes and you have to get it done, you don't think of flaking out in front of the TV. And yet to relax at that point is so crucial, because it's in relaxing and letting go that your strength comes through. You don't bind up your strength with tension. And so we need to think then in terms of that combination of relaxing and yet being clear and alert with our mind. The second one we dealt with yesterday is perspective. The way a person interprets a situation will to a great extent determine the amount of stress that they experience in it. And often our stress is related then not to what's actually happening in the situation, but to things in the past, how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about the situation. And what we finally looked at then is what happens when we move to seeing a situation as the kingdom of God is at hand. And then today we're going to deal with, after we've had a stance in the situations, interpreted it, then we react in some way. And what is that reaction? What is that response? And what are some of the options open to us? Now to do this, what I would like you to do is take just a moment now to think of some kind of a situation or some relationship that is stressful for you. Just let yourself select an example. And if you would, if you close your eyes, you might be able to see yourself in that setting. See what that relationship or situation is like for you. Stress is defined as some situation in which we experience a demand. It may be either a situation where there's an overload of expectation, or it might be a situation of underload, where not enough, where you're bored, where not enough is being expected of you. Okay, now that you have a situation in mind, let me have you reflect on it for a moment. What is there about that situation? First, what kinds of reactions are you having? What do you notice in your body? And often underlying then, whatever's happening to us, however we're feeling that stress, is some kind of anxiety. And would you take a look at that situation and see if you can get an idea, what is it that you're anxious about in relation to that situation? What is there in that situation that is stressful to you, produces some kind of anxiety? To think for a moment about that, because it may not be apparent to you at first. What is really the issue? What is really concerning you? (Clears throat) be a number of things, but keep looking beneath and behind what you think of. First you may think, well, I want things to work well. And then you might think, well, but I'm really concerned about what people will think of me, or how well I do. And keep looking underneath. What is it? Okay, now as you begin to identify some of what's bugging you about the situation, some of what you're anxious about, now move to the question, what is it that you believe about that situation? What are some of your attitudes and beliefs that are creating that anxiety, are making that an issue? Might be expectations of yourself, the way you ought to be, or the way things should be, or what other people ought to be like. Okay, and now if things go poorly for you in that situation, if things don't go the way you want them to go, what is it that's likely to happen? And where will that leave you? What then? Sometimes that kind of question begins to put it in perspective. Now what I'd like to have you do, continuing to look at that scene, what I'd like to have you do is see there that the kingdom of God is at hand in the scene that you're looking at. And as you look at that scene, have the sense that God is in charge of everything that's happening there. That ultimately, God is in charge of history. Have the sense that God is with you. God sees you as a significant person in that situation. He loves you and sustains you in it. And then also see that everything and anyone else in that situation is ultimately a gift of God. Each person, each thing, the whole situation is ultimately has its significance in its relationship to God. Have now a sense that God can help you deal with that situation, will guide you in dealing with it. What kind of guidance would there be if Jesus were to come to you in that situation? What kind of guidance might you have in terms of ways to deal with the situation? How might that be different than the way you might naturally deal with it? Okay. And now, let yourself open your eyes and come into the room. Questions or comments coming out of what you experienced? What kinds of things happened?
I got was one of humor, which I hadn't expected.
Hmm.
I definitely could use that in the situation.
Uh-huh. Okay. Able to see it in a funny way or humorous way.
Well, that would be a response I could make.
Oh, okay. You could make a humorous response to lighten the situation.
The sense I got was that I was making a mountain out of a molehill. You know, when I looked at it, I was thinking, gosh, what is it? It's nothing, you know.
Uh-huh.
But really, to me, before seeing the problem.
Okay, and then what did you believe about life? What did you notice that you were believing about life that made that seem like a mountain?
I don't really know. I think I just didn't look at it realistically. You know,
mm-hmm. Okay, well, check again, because a part of your mind says that's a mountain and has a reason for believing that it's a mountain.
Uh-huh.
And another part of your mind takes another look at it and says, oh, that's no mountain.
Yeah.
But so that's some old programming that you could kind of check out your mind and say, now, wait a minute, what is it that I believe is so important here? Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think some degree, too, as I was looking at this, there's sort of a relaxation that occurs as you sort of try to get a overview, as you were leading us through some of the options and, you know, some, having us do some thinking about it at various stages of it. I think that's sort of helpful, at least it seems to me sort of helpful. So it was relaxing.
Sure, okay.
Sort of, let some of the stress or tension, pressure sort of subside.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Part of what I was doing then is bringing in your present awareness to be able to look at it with your full awareness rather than being stuck with old programming ways of looking at it. So usually there's some beliefs and attitudes coming out of the past that lead you to feel like it's a very stressful situation. And it's useful sometimes to say, just what do I believe that makes that so stressful or so important?
I thought when you mentioned about the worst case scenario too, you know, sometimes you sort of, you know, obviously, you know, life will still go on if it works out the worst.
Yes.
Especially, I think, in a faith perspective, that's good.
That kind of question helps put it in perspective, where you just step back for a moment and say, well, really, what is the worst that can happen? What's at stake here? Am I really going to lose that? Okay, let's take a look at the response issue. Would you be willing to help me with some demonstration here? Your name is?
Dan.
Dan, okay. Would you stand over here, then, please? Okay, now what do you do when someone pushes against you?
Push back.
Okay. Now that answer is almost automatic. I ask groups repeatedly and that answer comes back just like that. But that's programmed into us, that when someone pushes against you, you push back. Okay, let's experience that a little bit. Begin to push. Okay, what do you see happening?
Getting redder.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Resistance increases, as yours does.
Okay, the harder I push,
the harder
he pushes. So it escalates. At first he thought, oh, it's not, you know, a little push, and oh, he's getting serious. Okay? And then the harder we push, what happens?
More
upset. Okay. Yeah, I'm investing more focus on this. More of my energy, more of my focus. What happens is I get locked in.
Uh-huh.
Boy, I better push all I can here. And I'm zeroed in on this pushing. And how available am I to consider other options at that point? Not very. Partly because I'm extended, I'm off balance, and I'm totally focused on this push, and I'm getting tired, I'm getting anxious and scared about what's going to happen here. You know, am I going to lose? Am I going to be wiped out? Am I going to look like a dummy? You know, all of this stuff starts coming in. And that's what happens, is we enter into a push-push kind of experience. It is thought that this kind of push happens internally. And one of the things I was reading is they're wondering, for instance, why we develop high blood pressure. Why do we get the plaques developing in our bloodstream? And one of the ideas was that it's kind of like this push-push, that we lock ourselves in some way, and for some reason that locking goes on inside of us. And the locking then begins to cause a breakdown in some part of our system. And we end up with high blood pressure or other kinds of things related to it. Okay, let's do it again. Iron marks, get set, go! Okay, what happened that time?
You took it.
You relaxed.
The position immediately relaxed. The pressure was gone.
Okay. Did we settle the issue?
No.
Wait.
So I chose to flee at that time. We have two options in this sense, a fight, push back, or give up, run. And there's a time to fight and a time to run in some senses. But running and giving up doesn't solve a problem. I'm out of touch with this person. I don't have a way of solving the problem because I've gotten out of here. Now, one of the real problems in our society, I'm really going to need you once more, please be patient. One of the real issues and problems in our society is that these are physical kinds of responses. Your whole body gears up to push, and your whole body may gear up to run. This is the research of Hans Selye that says these are our reactions to stress. Although the problem is that we gear up to fight or we gear up to run, and we can't do it physically. If the boss says that's a lousy job and you feel like belting one, you say, whoops, I better not. And or if you feel like running out the door, you say, oh no, if I run out the door, I lose my job. So there's no way of expressing it physically. And so what happens is we move that fight-flight internally. And that's where it begins to do its damage and the problems. Now let's come at it once more here. Ready? Push. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now what happened that time?
You forced him to do what you wanted.
Not for him, but I'm
long. Okay.
But how did you bring him along without really pushing him?
You relaxed.
Well, he really let go of the pressure, and then he did too.
Okay, yeah. But I went with his pressure and let him come this way. And then as he did, we kind of made friends, and he was kind of relaxed, and he was willing to go my way a little bit then after a while. This I call flexing. So three options: fight, flight, or flex. Now let's just take a look at some of the characteristics of it. One is, I made contact. I stayed in touch with where the issue was at. I didn't leave it. Two, I was willing to not at that point force my own way, but instead I was willing to move with him as he pushed. Now three, look at what my feet did. Although I'm moving with him, I am still standing, I am still centered, I have not collapsed. I am moving with him. And because I am centered, I can move with options. I can move this way or this way or this way, whichever way he wants to go right now. And then I begin to move with him and we begin to get along, and then I can start guiding where we go. He's willing to hear me more, and so I can begin maybe to get some of my way. What happens is I begin ultimately to build a trust relationship.
But that's only if he's willing to cooperate. Someone, suppose he's not willing to cooperate.
Okay, so what happens?
I don't know, if he's not willing to cooperate, you know, I'm not, you know, you could have to think of some other strategy or something.
So I may need to go further.
Yeah. Maybe he passively resists and refuses to fight, refuses to do anything.
Maybe he passively resists.
Right.
Okay, could I be with him if he passively resists?
Yes, but I don't know if you can resolve things unless you deal with them openly.
Okay. But I could stay with him and still be in touch. Now, passively resist. Come here. We'll look. Okay, you act out what you would do if you passively resisted.
Well, I would probably push back, or else I would walk away. I would push back and I would try to deal with the conflict as openly as I could, what I would think would be openly, mm-hmm. by discussion and that kind of thing. And then eventually I would get tired of that if it got no results, and I would walk away.
Okay, now if you passively did that, acted out.
Okay.
Okay. And then I honestly forget. Go walk away. But he wouldn't go with me. He would stay there. Well, he would. Okay, the idea of flexing is to be with the other person. Now,
what do you mean by being with the other person? Do you mean in a physical way, or do you mean in some kind of a sharing way? You can be physically with another person and not be with them in spirit, so to speak. So what do you mean by being with the other person?
Right. I want to come to that, and I want to read this first and then get to that, because that's really what it's all about. Where does flexing come from? Do not resist one who is evil. Well, he starts. You have heard that it is said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, push and push. But I say to you, do not resist one who is evil, but if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your coat, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go 2. Give to him who begs from you, and do not refuse him who would borrow from you. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. And does that fit life today?
Well, it fits certain people, but not everybody. They're not the takers. And you can go with them 5 miles and it still makes no difference. You know, they'll just take all, as long as you're willing to give it, they will take it.
Okay.
A characteristic of society today is that we don't go that second mile with others. We're sort of a throwaway society. Something doesn't work, and I think marriage is a good example. I don't think you see the working at marriage that there might be, because divorce is easy and so on and so forth.
Okay. So should we say to Jesus, you really aren't very practical, Jesus? You don't understand what life is like today?
Well, he doesn't have to be practical by man's standards, because he's God, and he doesn't have man's standards.
Well, okay, but should we say that what he's saying to us doesn't really make sense for our lives?
I think in some situations that may not make sense. Because you may destroy yourself in the process.
That's good. I think it does, but we don't realize it. Because we let other things cloud what reality in our life. Stress-filled world that we live in, it kind of takes over the precedence.
And we don't know what God's plan is for us either, so... Mm-hmm.
We let some things cloud. Okay. What gets clouded?
Perceptions of reality.
Okay, and what is there about reality that we don't see?
A lot of it comes right back to ourselves. We don't see who we really are.
Okay.
Because we let things and other things get in the way.
Yeah, what I'm sensing is that the whole Sermon on the Mount does not make any sense unless we see that the kingdom of God is at hand.
Right, unless God is operating in your life, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, but my hunch is that the kingdom of God is at hand, and that's really what is reality. And that Jesus is being ultimately very practical. And that we would be much less stressed and that we would move easier in life. It doesn't mean all of our problems are solved. It doesn't mean that there won't be stress, because if Jesus was living out this, Jesus faced the ultimate stress of people wanting to take his life. He was living this way. It doesn't mean that everyone's going to go along with you. But he has this goofy kind of phrase where he says, why be afraid of those that can hurt the body or kill the body? Why be afraid of those that can kill the body? Why not? We might say. Well, let's take a look at then, how could this be practical? And first, in order... as you are threatened or under stress, let's first see how you see a situation. As you look at a situation, you can either believe that it is a threat to you, or it is a challenge to you, or it is an opportunity.
What about a threat to somebody else, but you're the one that's kind of the responsible one? Say if you're a physician and your patient, it's a threat to you that something that you're going to do something wrong won't hurt you, but it will hurt them.
Okay.
How does that fit in there?
Well, that in a sense it's a threat towards your image of what you need to be able to do at that point. You're feeling, I should be able to solve that person's problem. But I'm afraid I can't, or I'm afraid I might make a mistake. Is that kind of what you're referring
to? Even if you get past your threats to you, it seems to me it's more a threat to them. I cannot be so concerned about what's going to happen to me, but I don't feel like I have that right to be not concerned what's happening to them.
Okay.
So you can kill me or whatever, but in this case, it's not me you're killing, it might be the patient.
Mm-hmm. So, however you interpret it as a threat.
Thank you so much.
Now, what happens? Got a homely little story here. You're a fielder out in left field in a baseball game, and the score score is tied up. And the bases are loaded, it's the bottom of the ninth, and it's two outs, and if you catch the next fly that comes, the team will be out, and you will have won the game. Now, you're 1 point ahead, I'll have to say that. And if you drop the ball, why, they get enough home runs and they win the game. And the question is, then, if you were that fielder, would you want to be that fielder or not? Would you, and how would you see that situation? Where the whole, let's say it's the end of the year, this is the final game to determine the final winner. And would you want to be that person? Now, how you answer that will be determined by how you see that. If you see it as a threat, oh boy, I better catch that or I will lose the whole year. Everything rests on me. Then what would you feel?
Stressed.
Really stressed. Okay. Now, if you saw it as a challenge, saying, well, boy, this is a big opportunity for me. I can really be a big hero here. Let's see if I can do this. This will be a real challenge. Then what would you feel?
Excited.
Excited. Yeah. And if you saw it as an opportunity, I've been practicing all year. I'm pretty good in here. I'm going to see if I can catch this next ball. What would you feel?
Confident.
Confident, okay. Kind of energized? Just ready?
Even more relaxed of the three.
You'd be much more relaxed here. Right. Less tense, more open. Now, as you think of the situation that you were thinking of, was it a threat? Was it a challenge or an opportunity? That might help you take a look at how you're looking at the situation.
I don't see a big difference between the challenge and the opportunity.
Okay, well, it's probably more what's at stake. If you want to be the hero, and this is your chance, this is the big challenge, you might be a lot more excited than, you know, I thought your word was good when they're really hyped up for it. Whereas if it's an opportunity, you relax and you get ready to do it, and you're going to do as well as you can.
So,
yes?
My question would be whether, if you're using this as an example, whether the ball player was being, if he was a professional baseball player, because then there would be an added feature of the fact that that is his job.
Mm-hmm.
Catch that baseball, and he wouldn't have to. I mean, he couldn't necessarily put himself in any one of those three positions. He would automatically have to do it because that's his job. Mm-hmm. If he was a good baseball player.
Okay. Don't you think he would still have these options, mm-hmm. and how he would view it?
I would hope, as the owner of the baseball team, that he wouldn't. That he would just do it because that was what he was being paid to do.
Okay. Yes.
I think a little leaguer that wasn't paid a nickel would still have the same three if he was playing that field.
True.
He'd have one of those three things.
Okay. Okay, well, I see what you're saying is that because he's paid and it's his job, maybe he just sees it as, well, here today's another day. However, if it's at the World Series, and everything rests on catching this ball, I guess if he just saw it as his job, he'd see it as an opportunity. I mean, an opportunity to do his job. Or he could see it as these others too, potentially. Even though it's my job, sometimes I can get really scared about how well am I going to do.
I guess I'd look at that as the three different things as a, I can relate to the football better than I can to the baseball. Here you are, you're down 4 points and it's 2 minutes to go and you're on your own 5-yard line. You know, if the guy, his quarterback in that team has just been brought in off the bench because the other three or four ahead of him were injured, that's going to be a real threat. Maybe the guy came off the bench and he hasn't been working that hard this year. It could be a real challenge, but if it's your usual hard-working, studying type quarterback. He's probably well prepared for this, and when the preparedness and opportunity come together, he's going to make it, or he's not, but he's going to go down the field with the idea he's going to make it, and he would just keep trying things that that are part of the plan. He wouldn't go off and, you know, make some harebrained thing like the guy who's threatened by this situation might, you know,
succeed. Yeah. Now, you were saying when I raised the question of what's the worst thing that could happen, what I sense happened, for some of you at least, is you began to put it in perspective. And you said, hey, wait a minute, this isn't such a big deal, you know, and maybe began to see it more as a challenge or more as an opportunity. You began to let go of the threat of it. And what that does is then help you move to a stance of much more of a relaxed approach to the situation. So the issue here is, how can you shift from seeing it as a major threat to seeing it as an opportunity? And part of the way to do that is put it in the context of the kingdom of God. So this thing doesn't go so well for me, so okay, there's still more life, and the kingdom of God goes on, and there's other times and other opportunities, and I'll need to deal with it, but it doesn't need to destroy me ultimately. And it begins to take some of the threat out of it and remove it. Seeing the kingdom of God is the first shift, and in a sense I call it moving from fear to faith. Our life is either based on fear, the fear of being nobody, or it's based on faith that finally I am somebody by the grace of God. And it's coming to a deep realization of that that helps me make that first shift in how I approach things. Now, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, go two. Why would you go two?
That would put you in control and not him, the one that's forcing you. Possibly, not.
Possibly, him. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Isn't part of the answer that they expected them, they could force them in those days to go one? They couldn't force them to go two, so Jesus is saying do more than being expected at this point. He didn't say go 50.
Do more of what? What are you doing more of?
Really like getting people to think of being a servant to each other. Be a servant. Do more for other people than is expected by the status quo.
Okay. But the other person has a need for you to go a second mile. And so the reason to go a second mile is to tune into the other person's need and respond to their need. If they ask you for a coat, give them the cloak as well. It's like, what is the other person needing at this point? How can I meet that other person's need? And if you begin to meet another person's need, what happens?
You feel good about it.
You can feel good about it.
They start to be more receptive to you and your ideas.
And they build some trust, right? When someone blows up at you and attacks you and comes at you, what is that an expression of?
Fear.
Their fear. An attack on you is a cry for help. And when you begin to see it as that, you begin to see another way of reacting. That person has a need. Now at first, you see, when we push back, we begin to see only the threat to ourselves. And if we're focused only on that threat, then we react out of fear. And we escalate the problem. When we instead, we move our awareness to the other person and say, What's going on there? What's that attack about? What's the problem? Begin to sense where they're at and figure out how we can maybe meet some of their need. Then there's at least a hope for some kind of a relationship with each other. And hopefully we can become some level of trust, we can become friends, we can have some way of both existing in this world, which is the ultimate. The question, how can we all exist
in the world.
But like this lady said back here, in some situations, and maybe that's not a bad thing, but in some situations, one party would be going the second mile all the time, and the other party would just keep expecting more and more and more. So that eventually, the person that's going the second mile needs are not going to be met at all, because they're giving of themselves to the point of draining the cup, so to speak.
Okay.
And there's a certain amount of infilling, I think, that can be done by the Lord, but I think there is a point where both people's needs have to be met, and if one person's doing all of the second miling, and the other person isn't acknowledging that in any way, you have an irresolvable conflict.
Some people see it as weakness.
Yes. And it is a strength to be able to go that second mile.
Okay. Yeah.
There must be some distinction to be drawn here between resisting evil in one case and resisting evil in another case, because we would have numerous instances in the life of Jesus where he certainly seemed to resist evil, where he was uncooperative, or in some cases antagonistic. And yet we have this other turn. We have the other turn the other cheek, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I think there's surely a way of harmonizing those two points of view. I don't think that Jesus does want us participating in evil, but I do think that he wants us carrying on a dialogue with those who are not certainly absolutely evil, and there's no way of resolving conflict other than by that means. But there's some distinctions, maybe finer distinctions to be drawn between, you know, what would be resisting evil in one instance versus another. I think that maybe that's part of the problem.
So going the second mile is different than what I might call a please me script, a pleaser script. There are some people who say the only way I'm really going to be important in life is to please everybody. And that person then goes along with whatever other people want, because that's the way they're making themselves important. And at that point, underlying that often then is a resentment, or at least being threatened. They have gone along, therefore you need to treat me like I am important or somebody. Now that person then is trying to prove themselves somebody rather than being really comfortable with their somebodyness. And their pleasing way is a manipulation. And so there are a number of ways of doing this that don't get the same kinds of results, because it feels different in some way. And ultimately the person ends up feeling different themselves. And I'm not presupposing here to have the answers of how to do this in all kinds of situations. But there's a truth and a validity here. Now, one of the issues is that, let's go back to the situation you were thinking of. How could you get tuned in to the other person's need in the situation that you were thinking of? One of the ways is that becomes the real issue. It often is that if we're too anxious about ourselves, then we can't really respond to the other person and find out what they need. For me to know where to go, I need to tune in, as Bill pushed here, I needed to tune in. Now, wait a minute, where does he want to go? What does he want? What's this all about anyway for him? So it's centering, becoming less afraid, and then tuning in and responding. Now let's see, who would be willing to do a role play with me to play around with this a bit? Someone want to play with it?
I feel a threat.
Okay, what I'd like to have you do is be my boss, and essentially you're going to berate me because a report was incomplete, and just kind of come at me, and I'll react to that. Okay?
Dan, right?
Dale.
Dale, I see that you handed in the report today, and I'm not very well pleased with it.
Well, what's wrong with it?
Well, it wasn't complete, and I know that you can do better work.
Well, if you'd just given me more instructions, I would have known what you wanted, and it could have been complete.
I think you got plenty of instructions. I've gone over this in detail, and you still did not do what I told you to do.
Well, just what was it then?
Well, I wanted the figures in two columns.
Okay. What happened there?
You put the blame on him.
Okay.
You backed down though a second ago when you asked him what he did want, instead of just keeping defending yourself.
Okay. You may have backed down a little bit. I may have been setting him up to say, you tell me what you want, and then I could say you didn't tell me or something. Yeah. Okay, but essentially it was a push-push, wasn't it? Okay, let's do something similar again. Okay? Same kind of thing.
Same kind of problem.
Yeah,
okay.
We'll do it over again.
Okay. Dan, I called you in today because I'm not too pleased with the report you gave me.
Oh, what was wrong with it?
Well, it was incomplete.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't help get the report done.
Well, I really feel bad. I'm really sorry. Yeah.
Well, see, that's not how our company is run, though. I mean, you could be sorry all you want, but the business has to get done.
Well, I'm sure you understand. I just had so much to do, and I'm really sorry. Next time, I'll really do better.
Well, what about the report? This report, though. Well, and this isn't the first time either.
I'll be glad to. I'll do anything you want.
Well, the problem is, Dave, I'm not sure if you can do it.
Oh, well, I'm sure I can. I'm sure I can do it if you just let me try.
Well, I've given you many chances, and it's just got to the point where I don't know if you can do it anymore. And I'm just wondering if we should keep you on here.
Well, I feel I can do it if you just give me a chance. Really, I really feel bad. I'm very sorry that this happened, and I'll do better next time. Cut. Okay.
Good acting.
Yeah. Okay.
No matter what you did, it was wrong.
Yeah, what did you see that then?
You were just running away from it.
Right. Not
avoiding the issue.
Not really dealing with the issue at all. Just trying to promise the world or agree to anything or trying to get out the door as fast as I could. Really clean. So it was a fight kind of response.
So you were focusing on your bad feelings too. You were focusing a lot on your bad feelings. You kept apologizing, I feel bad, that sort of thing.
Yeah. My assumption was that that's what he wanted, was for me to feel guilty and so forth, since he was accusing me. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do it once more.
Do you want me to let off a little bit? Or?
No, why?
Dan, I'm a little disappointed in the report you gave me this morning.
Oh, I'd like to know what the problem is.
Some of the instructions that I'd given you weren't completed. I wanted 5 pages, not 3, and I wanted double space, and you gave me single space.
Oh, I guess I didn't understand those instructions then, because I had done it that way before, but this fits what we need to do at this time?
That's correct. Those are the instructions I gave you. I'm wondering why it is you didn't understand them in the first place.
I'm not sure why that was. I may have been upset that day about that other project we were working on, but I realized I didn't actually hear you then.
Okay. So you think that if you had another chance that you could do it right?
Yes, and I can understand why you'd be upset with not fulfilling what you'd expected.
Okay.
What happened at that point? What was happening there?
You accepted responsibility.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because I was trying to be tough and it's like all of a sudden I was, and it surprised me that I was that way.
He was taking his wind out of your sail.
Well, it was just like you kept putting the ball back in his court. As he kept saying things to you, you kept saying, well, tell me more. And it was like a disarming effect on him.
Okay. And what I was trying to do is say, I want to understand you. You've got a problem. You've got a concern about my functioning. And I need to understand what you need and what you want. And so he was repeatedly going back, trying to make sure that I was understanding what he was saying. So I was feeding back. I probably should have fed back, you wanted 5 pages, so that he knew I heard him this time. And then going back to make sure that his need was being understood and that I was going to be able to respond to that. Thank you.
The passive aggressive person might stand there and not reply.
Right.
Not even look dejected or anything, just stand there.
Not say anything.
Not say anything.
Okay, yeah.
Because they're really refusing to deal with the issue.
Well, sometimes they could stand there and say, okay, but they really don't mean it. They're just pacifying.
That's right, and that feels different, doesn't it? Okay, active listening is the process of working hard at letting the other person know that you are understanding what they're saying and letting them know, just clarifying, making sure that you understand it. So that I kept needing to come back and make sure I was understanding why he was concerned about this and how he was concerned and what he wanted from me. And understanding or active listening then is a way, one of the ways in a stressful situation of moving with the situation. It's another way of doing this that we did physically. And some of you were in Ted's session this morning, but he had one that he had a quote from Dean Rusk, one of the best ways to persuade others is with your ears. Because that's the way we can tune in and move with.
When you're caught off guard, though, how can you keep from becoming defensive? Sometimes, you know, if you can see something coming, you can get a little bit prepared, but sometimes things that are totally unexpected, it's really hard for me to not get caught up in the whole situation before I even know what's happened.
Right. And we do that, and so first we need to recognize when we do and recognize that we had options and kind of go back over it and then say, what could I have done? And as we do that, we will begin to develop some skill to catch it sooner. And then like when someone attacks you, here it is a cry for help. Have some phrases like that. When someone comes at you and says, hey, what's wrong with that? Or what's wrong with you anyway? Cry for help. All of a sudden you say that inside of yourself and you shift. Oh, let's see, what's that person upset about? What are they concerned with? And you shift out of the need to come back and fight back. And you all of a sudden move your awareness out to that other person and say, what's going on for them? What's the difficulty? And building these skills, practicing these listening skills, we just assume in our general orientation that listening has very little effect or very little power. And yet, are any of you salesmen? If you are, you know how much you're trained to listen and use listening and feedback. And then you learn such things as pacing. And there won't be time to go into this, but pacing is saying some things that the other person can identify with. Now I began to say, hey, I can understand that you're upset with this. And you say, yeah, I am upset. He could say, oh, he understands me. I understand how that feels. or you must feel this. As you sit there, you may have some questions in your mind. You're wondering how this is going to work. And you're also aware that it's about 5 o'clock and time for dinner. And so you could decide to feel good and celebrate the rest of the day. Now, what I was doing was making several statements that you could begin to say, yeah, that's what I'm feeling. And as you do that, what a person does is begin to open. If a person feels like you're with them, they begin to open up their mind and their attitude to consider other options. This is one of the ways, for instance, that hypnotism works. As a hypnotist says things that the other person says, yes, those are true. And as they build the trust, then the hypnotist says, and now you will let yourself go to sleep, or now you will do this. And the person says, oh, okay. Now, because that works, if a person is really pacing with another person, really reaching out and understanding, really going the second mile, I truly believe that that person will become more open to a shared relationship. I believe that is basic to we as human beings. And that is why I think Jesus is very practical in that suggestion, that it's not as dumb as it sounds. Okay, I think let's go for, I know we're not going to solve this one because it's a big one.
Okay.
Let's go to